Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In this episode, I'm talking with author Anna Laldin for her debut novel, The Descent of the Drowned, available on March 15th through White Tigress Press. This story takes elements of Anna's background and is set in an Indo-Persian world with aspects of pre-Islamic Arabian mythology. The book focuses on Roma and Leviathan, two characters who could not be more different. Fate has other plans, however, and puts them on a quest to find an ancient treasure that will doom humankind should it fall into the wrong hands. Anna does a deep background into both characters, where they come from, and which ones she most relates to. We also look at the art of the story, both on the book's cover and some amazing fan art done by Adamar.art on Instagram. Author Anna Laldin joins me. Anna, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Now, there is so much I want to dive into because this this book is it's a very, very complex story. I'd like to start, though, with what led you to say, okay, I'm going to write a book?
Actually, it was at the time when I sat down to write this story, it was actually because I had just been diagnosed with a mental illness. And I was just finding it very difficult to cope with that. And I felt like I didn't really have any purpose in life and just was very, very depressed. And for a really long time, I had been following the news and kind of seeing what was happening around the world. And that also caused me to feel very frustrated and kind of powerless to help. And so when I sat down to write this story, it was actually with this thought that I wanted to do something with my life and not just kind of give in to the mental illness and just give up. But also I wanted to do something that would matter, that would have a positive impact, that would spread awareness and kind of, you know, make it worth the hard fight that I was going to put in with this book. And so that was actually what got me to sit down and write this book from start to finish.
Okay. Did you find in writing that it helped you to face this mental illness?
Definitely. I was still kind of trying to accept that I had this mental illness. It's kind of like different stages of coming to accept you have a mental illness and how it affects your life. And so I did explore certain things through the characters that kind of helped me deal with the things that I was going through in terms of my mental illness, definitely.
Do you have characters in the book that also have a mental illness?
Yes. Levi, the male protagonist in the story, as a child, he displays traits from high-functioning autism. And then during his time in the military, due to stress and pressure and certain traumatizing experiences, he develops a personality disorder.
Oh, wow. With that aspect, are you hoping that there's a sort of a takeaway, a message for the readers?
I think it's in the first book, I try more to sort of illustrate what it's like having a mental illness. But like with Levi, it's very, very subtle in the first book. It's not something that you would pick up on unless you kind of knew the signs. But I definitely have, like, for his arc later on, I definitely have like a certain direction I want to take his character, also in terms of his mental illness and how it kind of, where it kind of goes from the second book and on. So yeah, I do have like an idea that I want to kind of present, but it's still to come, sort of.
I get you. Okay, let's talk about the story, because I've been reading the book and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. This one, first of a trilogy, focuses on Roma, who is part of a lower caste that serves patrons to sustain the balance between gods and men, and Levi, who is considered casteless. He's the bastard son of an immortal tyrant although he's very proficient as a soldier, he still is considered to be just the lowest of the low. And these two characters wind up together in the hunt for an ancient treasure that could doom mankind if it falls into the wrong hands. These two characters, though, how do they wind up together and how do they act as a team?
It's a very interesting question because when I first started out writing the story, the very first draft, there was a romantic angle to the story, but I removed it actually because I felt like where these two characters are in terms of their own headspace, any kind of relationship between them would just be very toxic and unhealthy because they need very different things and they kind of still need to heal from certain scars that they have. So what I ended up getting was actually a kind of reluctant relationship that is not even really a friendship. It's just they realize that they have to depend on each other for certain things. And it's like they don't want to, sort of, but at the same time, there is a pull that they can't quite understand yet. It has to do with the larger plot and not a kind of romance between them. But that was kind of the idea, that they're still at a very shaky stage, that it's not really friendship yet. We don't know if it's going to be friendship, but that's kind of like the mystery that I'm trying to keep going.
I like that. I think that that's a more honest take on it too, because having them immediately become a romantic couple is a little cliche, you know? So I think it's kind of like, exactly, instead that they're like right on the verge of killing each other half the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I didn't want to write the expected. I thought that if readers picked up this book, they would immediately expect that, oh, we have a male protagonist and a female, they're going to end up together, obviously. And I was like, nope, not going to give you that. So, yeah.
Exactly. Give them something to think about. And your book certainly does that in a number of ways. The world, the mythology of the book, a lot of this touches on your own upbringing. I want to talk a little bit about the world. Now, I read that this is set in a colonized Indo-Persian world, but I'm not really too knowledgeable about that. Could you explain to the listeners really what that means and how it kind of ties into your story?
Yeah, definitely. It's Indo-Persian. I think the more correct term would be Indo-Arabian, but that's not really a term that we use much. So Indo-Persian is really just this mixture of South Asian and Persian kind of culture. Since South Asia has been invaded by Persians, and so there's like a lot of culture in South Asia that's inspired or influenced by Persian or Arabian culture. For the kind of the society that I wanted to build, was the inspiration was mainly pre-Islamic Arabian society. And the reason I kind of picked that particular period was because I could kind of draw parallels between South Asian, current South Asian society and pre-Islamic Arabian society in terms of certain customs that still exist. For instance, burying your newborn's daughter alive out of shame, that's something that still exists in South Asian society. And it's not something people talk about or really know anything about. And I thought it was just interesting to me that something that is such an ancient custom still exists and we don't really talk about it and we don't really address it in any way. And so that was really what I wanted to do, kind of mirror pre-Islamic Arabian society with current South Asian society and pick apart sort of the flaws and be like, talk a little bit about them.
One aspect that I gather is pretty prominent in this book is the caste system. Women seem to be like second-class citizens. Of course, as we mentioned earlier, Levi is, even though he's the son of the boss, basically, he is just dirt as far as everyone else is concerned. How does a caste system work, and why did you want to include it with your story?
I wanted to include it because growing up, I kind of experienced the caste system up close. I spent about 2 years at a Pakistani school in Denmark where people would ask me about my caste, and I think I was more Danish than I was Pakistani, so I didn't really understand what they meant. So I would have to ask my parents, and they kind of explained, oh, it's how we identify. And people ask about your caste when they want to know where are you in the social order and whether they should be associating with you. And that just kind of stuck with me. And so when I did my research and I discovered that this is an entire system that has existed in South Asia for centuries, and is very, very deeply rooted, that's when I realized that this is a huge issue, actually. And people who are lower castes or are the untouchables, who are the Dalits in India, they're treated very horribly. They are robbed of equal opportunities for jobs, for just generally having a better life. And this exists currently. And I thought it would just be so important to talk about this system in some way and show it the way that it is and how it's just a very terrible system that needs to be uprooted. And that was kind of where it came from, like my own personal experience with caste. And also just when I went to Pakistan on trips, when I was younger, I would see how lower caste people would treat it. It was, you know, there would be absurd rules like don't drink a glass of water from a person who is lower caste, who has touched it, because then it's impure. And so people still kind of, it's weird that they still kind of believe in these customs, even though they don't really think about why they believe in them. It's just how it is. And so I really wanted to kind of illustrate that system in the story world, so we can talk about, you know, the issue.
Now, you mentioned that you had to ask your parents about some of these things because you just did not know a whole lot about it. Were these some difficult conversations to learn about these aspects of your culture?
For a while, I felt like I was very embarrassed about being South Asian, because I thought, well, this is my culture. So, and it's a very ugly side of my culture. So I did find it very difficult to kind of process it. But once I kind of realized that every society has its ugly sides and, you know, this is ours, and what's important is that we talk about it, that we spread awareness about it, so we can find a way to kind of remove it and build a better society. And when I started thinking of it from that angle, it became a lot easier for me to deal with it.
Do you find, though, that it's hard to even bring it up among your generation or your parents' generation? Does it seem like they prefer to just let it be forgotten?
My personal experience really has been that the younger generation, those after me, don't know about these things at all. They're actually not aware that this exists. And so it's surprising, because the internet is like, you know, you have a lot more access to things now than you did back then. But I think that was one of the reasons why I decided to write a YA fantasy. It was because I kind of wanted to tap into that particular market where all the young minds are, so that I could spread awareness about this issue among them as well.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, a very complex, diverse world here, and you clearly have spent a long time on it. I'd like to ask, though, how long was spent building the world of your book before you even started writing it?
I wrote the prologue and first chapter back in 2007. And at that time, I didn't have the world at all. I just kind of had this character in mind, which was Roma, and I knew I wanted to write about women's issues as well. But it took me, when I started world building, it was in 2015, and I didn't start writing until towards the end of 2016. So about a year, I just spent researching and building the world, because, you know, you want to be an expert in your field of writing. You know, you don't want to just jump in and not know anything about what you're writing. So yeah, about a year, I think.
because there will always be someone to point out the flaws. There will always, yeah. always be someone to say, hey, you're wrong about that. That's not accurate. Exactly. And you don't want to, you never want to get those emails. You never want to get those like tweets saying, actually, this is wrong, and realize, oh, I don't know this at all.
Exactly.
In your research in the world building, did you find yourself going down different paths with things that you may, that maybe you weren't entirely aware of or didn't know enough about to write about?
Definitely. I when I started doing my research, I'm one of those writers or types of people who, when I find an article and there are several links and references, I click on every single one, and then it leads me to a new article, and then there are more links, and I keep going. And so that's actually how I ended up discovering more and more disturbing customs. And I was like, okay, this is happening too. This is happening too. And I had to sort of cut back a little bit and pick the ones that I wanted to include in the story world, because obviously I can't have every single social justice issue. That would just, it would be overwhelming for the reader as well. So, I did, during the research, I did end up discovering a lot of new things that, you know, that also kind of shaped the book in a different way, because I realized, oh, I have to, you know, angle this story from this in this way now.
You start off with one article, you keep going, mm-hmm. and then like 12 hours later, you're like, wait, what am I writing about again?
Exactly.
Now, when the time came to edit this down, did you have to cut a lot out in order to get it out there?
Yes. The novel was about 140K, and I cut it down to 112K. It was a difficult process, but yeah, it was necessary because it was a lot.
Did you have to lose a lot? Did you have to lose characters or whole scenes in order to make this cut?
I focused on, for me, because this is a book that I really wanted to be character driven. What was important to me was that I didn't compromise the characters and their personal experiences and journeys. So what I did was I cut away the things that didn't really, you know, bring anything to the table. It was maybe a chapter. I did delete like a whole chapter because nothing, I could kind of move what was happening into a different chapter and it would still make sense. So a lot of it was kind of like technical editing, like how can I, you know, shorten this chapter? But my focus was just as long as I can keep like the characters intact, then I'm fine with cutting away whatever is necessary.
Okay. Now for this book, you worked with White Tigress Press. How did you find them and how did that experience improve the book?
White Tigers Press is actually a family-owned press. Yeah. So for me, it was more about, you know, making sure that they understood what I wanted to do with the book and supported that. And they absolutely did because they had, you know, followed the journey. And so they knew exactly what I wanted. So for me, it was very, very easy to just kind of say, okay, you know, you guys are investing in this project. And, you know, I hope that it does well so you can make lots of money. But for me, I was just like, I finally get to publish the book the way that I have envisioned it. And that was important to me.
I can tell. Were there any changes that you were adamantly against that you said, no, we have to keep this thing. It's really important to the overall story.
Yes, but it was actually during, I started out querying different agents and I had some agents who were really interested in taking this on, but the kind of things that they wanted me to cut back on or change, I personally felt that I might be able to have a finished product that would follow the Y fantasy formula and do really well in the market, but I wouldn't be proud of it. I wouldn't feel like I could stand by it. And so I had to weigh that with kind of like, which path do I want to take? Do I want to write a book that does well immediately, or do I want to write a book I might have to fight for a lot, but I can stand by it. And so obviously I decided to take the other path and kind of go with my family's press. But it wasn't hard for me to kind of tell them what I wanted because they understood it. If I'd gone with an agent and gotten a publishing house and they made certain demands, I think that would have been a lot harder for me.
Mm-hmm. I can tell that this book means a lot to you. There's a lot riding on this, both professionally and personally. So when it got to the point that there's no turning back, the book has been accepted, edits are done, it's off to be printed, what were you thinking?
I was terrified. I was just terrified. And I have been terrified since. I still haven't gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm so excited. Yay, I'm enjoying this. No, it's every day. I wake up terrified. I go to bed terrified. And I'm like, this is happening. I can't pull out now. It's too late. My publicist is out there working hard. I have so many people who are counting on me, counting on this book. So I just try to kind of stay off the internet so I'm not obsessively checking what people are saying. And then the second thing is I try to give back to the readers as much as possible because I'm really, really grateful that they're supporting this project. So, yeah, but yeah, I haven't reached a point where I'm like, yes. Right now it's still, oh God, oh God.
I get that a lot from people, especially when it's their first album or their first book or their first movie. It's not, yay, this is happening. It is, oh God, what have I done?
Exactly. Exactly. And I still have moments where I'm like, I want to stop. I want to remove the book. I want to go back to my little cave and just stay there.
Oh, too late. It's already out there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you think when release day comes, that you'll be like checking a line for reviews?
No, actually my sisters, they booked me a horseback riding lesson. So I won't be home at all. I won't be anywhere near the internet. I'll be out in nature with a horse and hopefully that'll be fine.
I like that idea. I like that because I imagine most people would be like obsessively like Googling their name, Googling the book title. Has it been reviewed? Yeah. What do they say? What does Amazon say? What are my sales and so forth? That's actually a good plan. That's a good plan. Now, normally at this point, you'd be booking book signings, readings, tours, looking for expos to be a part of, but obviously not possible right now. Did you have a plan? And then when all this happened, did you have to say, okay, plans out the window, start over again?
Actually, no. When this the publicity part of the process started, we were already in the middle of a pandemic. To be honest, I'm a bit of an introvert. So for me, you know, not having to go out, it's just one of those things where in my head, I'm like, yes, you know, I don't have to go out. I don't have to do anything. I can just stay in my home and do everything online and it's fine. I do kind of feel like a little bit sad that I don't get to, you know, meet the readers because I really want to meet the readers and talk to them and, you know, see how they like the book and kind of see them react to it. But yeah, I'm an introvert, so I'm happy just being home.
No expos, no signings. Woo! Yeah.
Yes.
I get that. Now, as we mentioned earlier, this book is part of a trilogy. Without giving away too many spoilers, what can people expect in the future volumes?
Definitely more of the plot will be revealed and the characters will be going down very interesting paths. And I really can't say much because I'm so afraid I'm going to say something that's going to spoil. But there's a lot's going to happen in the sequel. A lot's going to happen for the characters. And so I'm excited to see how people react to it because I'm definitely not taking unexpected path with this story. So
did you ever see yourself being a writer?
Yes, because I have loved stories ever since I was a child. And I wrote my first story. It was a short story when I was 8 years old. And just then I just had this moment where I was like, I'm going to publish one day. I just know it. But over the years, I think I just started going in different directions because, you know, obviously when you're not really focusing on a craft completely, then your attention is kind of going different places and you try other things. But I somehow always came back to writing. And so I think I knew from the start that this was what I wanted to do.
I love the cover art for this book. It is phenomenal work. Now, when you were writing this book, did you already have an idea for what you wanted the cover to look like? Or did this come about working with White Tigress?
Well, I had a general idea. I knew I wanted a cobra and I knew I wanted a heart. That was kind of the two main symbols I really wanted. But it was really when the press worked with the illustrator that the illustrator, I kind of told her what I wanted in terms of main symbols. And then she took everything else to the next level. It was, she added the branches and the leaves and, you know, the blood dripping and the scale, the golden scale coming off like glass shards. That was all her. And she did such a great job. And I was like, so happy when I saw the cover.
Because people always judge the book by its cover.
Exactly.
Every time. I have no joke. I have bought books just because the cover looked awesome.
Exactly. I have too. Even sometimes when I add a book on Goodreads to my read list, it's because, oh, pretty cover. Click.
Hey, same thing. I'll be like in the store, be like, oh, this looks interesting. What's it about? I don't care. I'm still going to buy it. And speaking of art, I saw on your Instagram page that another Instagrammer, Adamar.art, did some character sketches for you. How did you meet this person?
I really just stalked a lot of artists online. I Googled and I started stalking their Instagrams and I was like, who should I choose? And then I saw her art and I really liked the kind of realism that's in her art. And so I just really wanted her to do the two main characters.
I am glad that worked out for you. I really am, because the art is phenomenal, and everyone should definitely go follow this person. Their art's superb stuff. Now, you're described in your biography as a hashtag own voices author. What is that? I've never really heard of it.
Own voices is really just when you have certain personal experience or identity that goes with any of the main characters. So, for instance, Roma is a South Asian woman, and I'm a South Asian woman. That makes me an own voices author. Or Levi has a personality disorder. I have a personality disorder, so that makes it own voices as well. So it's really things like that that makes it own voices.
Tell me about the importance of bringing your own voice, about not having to compromise yourself for the sake of doing something that would be a guaranteed moneymaker or a guaranteed like New York Times bestseller?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think I just always felt like it was more important for me to write a story that would leave something good behind so that when people pick it up, even after I'm dead, it's like they pick up something good, you know, something I know I would be proud of that I left behind, that, it, you know, it has a positive impact. People become aware of certain issues. I think it's not like I never had a moment where I was like, oh, it would be really cool if this book, if I could write a really cool YA fantasy that just hit the bestseller list and, you know, made lots of money and I became super popular, would be pretty good. I won't lie, but I can't write that type of stories. I can't write for the market, which is what you need to be able to do if you want to, you know, tap into mainstream market and, you know, appeal to the masses. You have to kind of follow a certain formula that is tried and true. For me, I tried because, you know, I had professionals looking over the manuscript and they were like, if you do this and this, then this will definitely fit into the YA fantasy mold and become a commercial success. And then I went back over the manuscript and I tried to kind of, you know, follow their guidance. And And it's just, I couldn't do it. And so I ended up just, you know, going a different way.
I think that's the best way. I think if you try to do something that was just going to be like a mass market success, it wouldn't be you. It would be you trying to latch on to whatever's popular at the time, trying to do the next, whatever is popular in YA culture right now. I'm not actually sure myself, but I think it's very important that you're honest with your writing. Even if it only sells, you know, X amount of copies, this is your book, not your version of someone else's book.
Exactly.
Now, of course, like any good artist, your book is done, but you're already working on the next one. But you've also got a separate YA fantasy duology set in a similar kind of world. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
It's actually a very dark retelling of a Danish fairy tale that that happens in an Indo-Persian setting. But it's not how you would usually imagine a fairy tale, because, you know, I'm the type of writer, I like to, you know, add a lot of different things and psychological stuff and emotional stuff. And I never really, you know, it's not a typical retelling. It's more my version of a retelling. I don't even think you could call it a retelling. It's more like inspired by certain aspects of the fairy tale. And then I've just kind of turned everything on its head. But it's actually one of my favorite fairy tales ever, because there's so much psychological stuff in it that you can kind of talk about. So for me, it's just like one of those really good fairy tales that you can dive into.
Nice, nice. Now, there is so much to your book. So many things that it touches on. Your background growing up, the aspect of mental illness. Do you feel like there's a central message here, or is it going to vary based on who's reading it?
I think people can take away what they want to take away. So it's really depending on who reads it. I would say that there is a central message, in the sense that, you know, there are certain things happening in the world that we need to be aware about, and we need to spread awareness about it. And definitely in terms of the characters too, there are certain things that I wanted the readers to think about, like what is forgiveness, or, you know, with a character like Levi, who has done so much wrong and still continues to make really bad choices. does that mean that he is irredeemable, that there is no way for him to be forgiven or be shown mercy? Or, you know, I like to kind of ask those questions. Also in terms of Roma, for instance, how much of yourself should you sacrifice for your family and to stay in a certain environment out of fear that you would hurt your family if you left? So questions like that, not because I want to give a definite answer, but because I want readers to think about what it means for them personally. That's about it. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's going to depend on who's reading it. With the characters of Levi and Roma, do you think that you identify with either one?
I think I identify the most with Levi, and he's also the character that I have most difficulty liking. Personally. Yeah, you can, you know, give a psychiatrist that one and see what he takes from that and tells me. It's like, so yeah, I definitely relate more to Levi, and it's not exactly in the best ways, but yeah.
What makes him so hard to like?
I think So there's so much drama with him. There's so much, like, he's so gloomy and doom and gloom all the time. And, you know, everything is, he doesn't ever lighten up and just kind of see things in a less cynical way. And also just kind of, I think it's his self-image and his worldview that kind of makes it difficult for me to fully love him. I hope I will get to that point with the sequel or something, but right now where he is, I mean, I guess it makes sense when you been through what he's been through, that you're not exactly a happy fella. But yeah, I think it's just his self-image and his worldviews that kind of bother me.
That's very honest. With the character of Roma, clearly she is, and this is putting it very, very mildly, she comes from a very, very tough life. Where does she find her strength?
Yeah, that's a good question. Where? When I built her character, there was one thing that I knew for certain, and it was that she has to be a resilient person. So whatever happens, she doesn't reach the point where she breaks completely. She always picks herself back up and continues to fight, and she never quits, basically. And that's how I've been most of my life. My mental health issues started when I was 10 years old, and I was in and out of psychiatric clinics and hospitals, and, you know, just a lot of stuff happening throughout my teen years, well into my 20s until I was diagnosed. And I just had, I think I was like Roma, you know, when things were really, really hard and I wanted to give up, and I gave up for a minute, but I couldn't quit. Like I kept fighting on. I kept waking up next morning and be like, okay, let's try again. So her resilience was kind of something that I personally felt I connected with. And I think a lot of the reason that she can take so much and continue is also because there are people that she cares about, that she wants to stay alive for, that she wants to fight for, her younger brother, for one. But I want her to reach a point where she wants to live and fight for herself more than anyone else. And so, yeah, so that's kind of the idea with her character.
Did you have to spend a lot of time like planning out the book in terms of how it was going to go? Or did you just go and see where it took you?
I plan out everything. I had like, you know, you have those post-its and you put them on the wall and you create a pattern. And then you kind of, you know, when you're writing, you're kind of following the pattern and everything and moving it around. That's me, like, as a writer. I just have like everything outlined and everything planned. And if something unexpected happens where I have to change things, I'm flexible. I'll change it. But I need to kind of have things outlined so I can see where the characters are going.
That makes sense. Well, Anna, I have loved talking about this book. And for the folks at home, The Descent of the Drowned releases on March 15th through White Tigress Press. You go to laldinana.net. That's laldinana.net for more information. And definitely looking forward to talking about the next book.
Me too. Very excited. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Of course.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
All right, folks, that brings this episode to a close. You can follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. Listen to the show on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. As always, keep those ears open.
Hey everyone, Max Bowen here. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know how much I love Comixology. This is the best place to go for digital comics from every company out there, from the big two to independent creator-owned titles. Well, folks, the big news is that they are hitting the presses. In the spring of 2021, they'll be teaming up with Dark Horse Comics, publisher of titles such as Black Hammer, Hellboy, and Sin City, my personal favorite, to distribute print editions of Comixology originals, graphic novels, and collections. This is going to include the Eisner Award winner Afterlift, along with Breaklands, Youth, and The Black Ghost. I have read most of these titles. They are amazing. I cannot wait to add them to my bookshelf. Now, these will be available in comic shops, bookstores, and libraries. And more will be announced in the weeks and months to come. But if you want all the updates, go to ComixologyOriginals.com and follow them on
Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.